Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 24th. I'm Ray Graff. It's that time again. It's time for the gardening program on Vox Pop, and we have the regulars. Horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. We welcome your calls, and I recommend you do it early. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551. It's always a popular program, so use those green thumbs, get the calls in early. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Weeding, watering, your calls coming up on Gardening Edition of Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and what a beautiful day to think about gardening. We have Bob Graves here from Fadigan's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery to answer your questions right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number, 800-348-2551. Gentlemen, it's lovely out there.
It's great out there.
It's beautiful, beautiful. Definitely planting time. No question about it. Everyone today asked me, so is it still too early to plant? Memorial Day is traditional. It is not. We have a really good run happening here for weather.
The light is green. So
keep in mind that this weather is extremely drying. The humidity is low, the temperature's up, the wind's blowing. If you're planting stuff, you need to water it.
Yeah.
Yep, that's for sure.
Well, that's, every show we've done so far, the weather has been rotten, so it's nice
it's,
to have you here
not
on a nice
today.
Day.
Not today, no, it's perfect.
Let's take a couple of emails here before we get going on the phones. This one's from Patrick in North Adams. Hello all, can a raised bed for vegetables be safely made with pressure-treated lumber?
You know, we get that question over the years, and pressure-treated lumber used to be certainly something that you would never want to use. My general rule is you don't use pressure-treated lumber too much for raised beds because you just don't really know what...
There's so many other great wood out there. There's larch, there's
cedar. That's what I was
going to
say, larch.
There's locust, hemlock even, four really good pieces or lumber that will last a long time. Pressure treated, they did something to it. You want to put that near your food?
I mean, if you're doing it for flowers, I don't think it's a big deal. But like Greg said, there's so many other wood out there that you could get that's rot resistant. And it's actually a lot cheaper a lot of times off rough cut sawmills.
Yes, exactly.
All right, this one's from Catherine in Niskayuna. My daughter lives in Sudbury, Massachusetts. She's having a hard time with her lawn. Her house property has a lot of pines in the back and around the property. First oil is very spongy and I think sandy. Not sure, that may be a typo. What would you recommend her to do to grow a lawn in her front yard? Also, there are no underground sprinklers allowed in the town.
Well, first question is there enough sun to grow grass? I mean, grass needs a certain amount of sun. If it doesn't have 3 or 4 hours, you're not going to grow grass no matter what you do. The sun is the energy source. If you have, you know, you can put all the raw materials in the way of water or fertilizer on the ground, and if you don't have the energy, you're not going to grow it.
Okay.
But if you have some sun and sandy ground, if you fertilize it and water it, you can grow grass. But it's going to be a struggle if it's real sandy.
And then the pines may be shading the grass, but they also may be competing with the grass.
Right,
the root systems may be there already.
But aren't the droppings very acidic from pines?
You know, you think so, but not always.
Really?
You have to check the soil. You don't know.
So the pH of a soil is determined by the mineral content of the soil, whatever the soil is made of, and not just organic matter breaking down, even if it is pine needles.
All right, this one is from Rennie. I am trying to screen my property for extra privacy. Can you recommend a climbing type of plant that would grow in shade?
Climbing hydrangea.
Virginia creeper. Very nice native. Beautiful, especially in the fall. Good fall color.
Mm-hmm.
It takes full shade.
Okay.
And that would be a lot quicker, the Virginia creeper. The climbing hydrangea, I got to say, is one of my favorite climbing plants, ornamental. But they sometimes take a little bit of time.
If he's under 70, climbing hydrangea, no problem.
Yeah, but an awesome plant.
It's an awesome plant.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep. And the Virginia creeper, it's nice to point out that it is a New York State native, too.
Why do they call it Virginia, then?
You know, it's probably down.
Same reason they call a Connecticut warbler Connecticut warbler. It's hardly ever in Connecticut.
But. Okay. And Canadian hemlock?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though it's in New York?
It's native, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Sorry I brought it up. Let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Lee in Albany. Lee, you're first.
Yes, I have a quick question about planting peonies. I have a big yard. I got a lot of bare root peonies, and I planted them. I tend to use a lot of mulch or compost on top, and I'm concerned because people say if you bury them too deep, they won't flower. I know when you plant lilies too shallow or too deep, I hear that they migrate to the right layer. I wonder if the peonies, even if they don't flower for several years, will they eventually find their way to the right place and flower?
Yeah. My experience with these has been, and we've had a big peony project at one time at the Arboretum, and the person that was running that, not me as a disclaimer, prior to me, planted them too deep. And we thought, well, let's see what happens. It didn't happen, and we had to lift them all up. And when we did, we lost a few, but most of them actually sort of did really,
really
well.
You've got to have them shallow.
Okay.
The best advice would be about 2 inches, I would say. And shallow is definitely the key. They will not figure out the right depth.
Right. And so you said mulch.
Just
because you said you put mulch on there. So that will, you know, that adds to that layer. So an inch or two of soil and an inch or two of mulch, and that's plenty.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks, Lee. We appreciate the call. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. The number, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, all here at the same time to answer your questions. Let's go over to Bob in Holland Patton. Bob.
Yes, I'm calling about two different properties, and in both instances, there's animals who have burrowed under. We've seen one on the property that's on dry land, pretty much, and Holland Patent, and it looks like a groundhog or woodchuck, I guess, and it appears as though it might be undermining some of the trees, taking the soil away from them. And the second property have a similar thing going, and I thought it was voles that were, I called a long time ago about voles undermining two big blue spruce trees. But now I see there's giant hole big enough to stand in with a pair of boots on.
Wow.
And it's right by the lake. There's a break wall about 4 feet from it. So someone suggested it might be a muskrat that's come.
Yeah, muskrats usually have the hole right in the water. They're rarely up from the water.
Yeah, and typically the muskrat hole is maybe 6 inches in diameter.
Sounds like a woodchuck.
If it's really
I see the muskrats come in to the building and go into the ground. But is it possible that it would go underground far enough and then come out into the yard?
Boy, they're usually in the water.
It could.
I have seen them pop up sometimes a little bit away from the ponds.
I was going to say, if it's a really big hole, is it a den like a fox?
Could
den
be a fox.
Something?
Oh, boy.
You know?
Could be a fox.
That's what you made me think of. But I think you got to set up one of those cameras.
That's a great idea. Yep. Get a,
I thought about that.
An inexpensive trail cam. They work really, really well for that. And
if you
got
to get rid of them, best hire a trapper would be the best thing to do for a have a heart type trap.
Okay. Hey, Bob, good luck with that. That's interesting. And over to line whatever. It's Marta in Cooperstown. Marta, you're on.
Hey, guys. My question's about lilacs, but I wanted to ask about that climbing hydrangea you mentioned. What color does it bloom?
It's white.
A big white panicle flower.
Yep.
Nice. All right. I know how to propagate roses. I do it a lot. But I was wondering how you do it with lilacs, or can you?
There's certainly a few different ways. The easiest way probably is to take what we call a root cutting, which would be a shoot that comes up around the clump of lilacs, and you got a lot of those little sprouts. And if you got a spade, especially when it was before it started to grow, but you could even do this even in after it flushes out midsummer. That, you know, anytime really, I've had good luck with root cuttings. So you just get a spade, and or you could even use a pair of pruners, kind of get underground a little bit, try to take a cutting of that little shoot. and get a little bit of the root with some hairs, and those work really well. That does only work for plants that are actually true from the root. Yeah. So if they're grafted, a grafted plant, that's not going to work.
These are pretty old, so I'm guessing they haven't been grafted.
Yeah, so the older ones typically work well. So that's a really easy way. Put that little shoot with some roots in a container or right into the soil. Keep them watered, and it works well.
I need a soft kind of a shoot before it gets all...
it'd be a woody shoot from the ground. It'd be a regular woody stem. Yep, you follow that right to the ground. Dig around it a little bit. Use your pruners. Cut it right underground, and you usually have some root hairs on them. It's really, really simple, and you're going to have
use willow water or root tone or something to...
You wouldn't even need it for this one. That would just be right into the soil, because you would actually have root hairs on it, hence it's a root cutting. The other way to do it would be for the hybrid ones that are grafted, you would probably have to go with a softwood cutting, and that would be taken in the summer. Early summer, when the shoots begin to elongate, there's a little timing test. We call it the snap test. And you would take that new elongated shoot and kind of bend it. And when it's ready for dipping it into a rooting hormone and sticking it into some media, you would find that when you bend it, it would actually snap kind of cleanly.
Like asparagus.
It's sort of like an asparagus, yeah.
That for a lilac, that's probably going to be like mid-June, actually.
I would say about mid-June.
Not too late, not into summer,
cool.
Really.
No, not right. Really. Yeah, you got it. Like really early summer.
Well, Marta, thank you very much. It's The Gardening Show. Fred Breglia is here. Greg Ward and Bob Graves will take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Colby Attorneys Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches. ColbyService.com. The Wild Center, Tupper Lake, New York, presenting Pete M. Wire's iForest, an immersive sound installation in a wild forest. WildCenter.org for details. Blue Sky Bicycles, Saratoga Springs, New York, now offering pedal assist electric bikes to the Capital Region, a new way to enjoy the outdoors. Test rides available, blueskybicycles.com. Wildbird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, chimes, binoculars, and many Father's Day gifts for Dad. Wildbirdjunction.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. And Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends.
Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, and oh, what a beautiful afternoon we have for a gardening show. We have Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward here to answer your questions. And very quickly, before we get back to the questions, I know Fred Breglia has some things going on at the Landis Arboretum.
All right. Well, I just wanted to say we wrapped up our big spring plant sale this past weekend.
Oh, yeah?
It was a great turnout. Saturday, I think, was the wettest Saturday in 20 years that I've been at Landis Arboretum for a plant sale. We thought we were doomed. It ended up not going that way. It worked really, really well. People came out even more so because it was raining, I think. I have no idea.
Cool.
But the plants didn't complain.
No.
And we're kicking off our programming for the year. We have a bird walk coming up early morning on Saturday. I believe it starts at 6 a.m., 6 to 9. We also have a summer concert series that we're going to be launching really soon in June. And there's a whole arsenal of different programmings that you could tune into. www.landisarboretum.org for all of the events and all of the details that go along with it.
Swell. I understand you're kind of on the bluebird trail.
Well, we have a lot of bluebirds this year, and we are, like I said, kicking off that early morning bluebird walk with George Steele, our nature educator.
Oh, yeah. He's been on this program
before. Yeah, he's been on before.
Sure.
And this year is just an unbelievable amount of bluebirds. We have just seen, and orioles, too, incredible amount.
Tremendous.
More than normal. So.
All right, a couple of quick emails here, and then back to the phones we will go. This is from Mary, And she says, hi, and thanks for the timely show. Well, Mary, we're happy to provide it for you. She writes, in addition to white-footed mice, chipmunks also serve as reservoirs for tick-borne illnesses. I can't kill chipmunks. They're too cute. Any suggestions on how to repel them? Fox urine doesn't work. For that, boy, I guess.
Chippies are tough. They're hard to repel.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have no definitely proven way to repel chipmunks. Yeah.
They're easy to catch with a have-a-heart trap, but there's so many of them, and you have to relocate them quite a ways. Yeah. We used to paint their tails.
It's not even legal to do that, is it?
No, I don't think so.
No, I mean, you wouldn't do that.
Bring them to Bob's house.
But you can hire a trapper.
Yeah, or just get a kitty cat. They love chipmunks.
And, I have had luck with cayenne pepper with a lot of different critters. I don't know if it's really going to work or how well it will work for chipmunks, but, hey, it's hard to go wrong with cayenne pepper.
The problem is chipmunks aren't in the garden and bothering your plants. They're eating your bird seed if you do that. But you reminded me, we have a red fox in the neighborhood who is, I assume it's one or both, regularly picking off the chipmunks in our yard, as well as the gray squirrels and even a red squirrel the other day.
Mm-hmm. So you could import a fox.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's a great idea, Fred, but we'll take that on under advisement.
It's a side business for somebody.
Thanks a lot for that one. Okay, just don't try that at home. This one is from Rich in New Jersey. Could you shed some light on my problem? Well, I don't know. We'll find out. I have a couple of climbing roses. Sorry, don't know what variety. The plants are about 5 years old. They seem to be pretty healthy, given all the things that like to eat them. They put out plenty of nice blossoms, but something goes wrong before the flowers mature. As they start to open, the outer edges of the flowers turn black. The flower then never opens all the way, usually just deteriorates. Sometimes the black edges spread to the interior of the blossoms, but not always. But essentially, I don't get nice, fragrant blossoms.
My first guess is thrips.
Thrips. I was thinking thrips, too.
Thrips are an insect that you can hardly see that that will move into the bud just as it's starting to crack open. They've been actually feeding on the foliage before this, but you can hardly see them. They move into the bud, and they just keep feeding on the bud, and the bud sort of deteriorates. Mm-hmm.
They are so small. What I do is I cut off a blossom or two, and I put a white piece of paper down, and I kind of shake the bud over the white piece of paper to try to see them because they are really small.
Yeah, sort of like spider mites. I've done same kind of thing.
And how would you get rid of them?
Insecticidal soaps have been
Pretty
good.
Right now is great because they haven't bud. They've started to think about a bud, but they're not even there yet.
New
foliage and a regular application of soap, of the insecticidal soap or horticultural oil are two.
Hard to get rid of all of them because they hide down in the petals, but you'll certainly control it.
And I'm just saying is before the buds are even there, you'll be getting the whole population. And I think even that spinosad product, which is an organic insecticide, will work on thrips, but you just want to check the label.
Yeah,
on that.
One tip with this would be that if you're going to do it, and I found if you're going to use insecticidal soap, the little tiny hand sprayer that you pump over and over and over to get it to go is not as effective because you really got to soak the, like Greg said and Bob said, all parts of that plant. Insecticidal soap, it's hard to overdo it with insecticidal soap.
Yeah.
So you get one of those tank sprayers where you can put some pressure in there and then make sure you really spray underneath those leaves.
Sure.
Because a lot of those thrips are going to hide underneath those leaves. And you look underneath the leaf and you're like, nothing's there.
You really
want to
drench the foliage.
So really drench the foliage. And it wouldn't hurt to do that maybe even like weekly. And certainly after it rains, but weekly as we move into the time when the blossoms will be forming.
Yeah, one application probably won't eliminate all the thrips.
All right, one or two more emails here, then back to the phones. This one is from Greg, wondering about how to germinate a wild hemlock seed. How do you do it? Also, any good book recommendations on germinating various wild seeds in the Northeast? And that is from Greg.
So there is a propagation book put out by Story Communications, nice paperback. Lewis, I think it's the author is a fellow named Lewis. It's available probably at a lot of bookstores or certainly online.
And probably Google every one of them easily, too.
But you can Google them. So, germinating seeds, especially woody plants, native woody plants, there usually is some need to stratify those seeds, which means to keep them cold for a certain length of time before they'll germinate to sort of produce a winter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just look into that. I'm pretty sure with hemlock there is some stratification.
Yeah, and the one that I've always used, I was trying to get the title really quickly, which I did. I've been using this manual since I was a college student, even before that. So it's a great one, certainly very accurate with its information. It's called The Reference Manual of Woody Plant Propagation. It's by Michael Durr.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an incredible, incredible manual. He also wrote the classic Durr handbook,
the Bible of Woody Plants.
So, and he's an incredible speaker, too, if you ever get a chance to see Michael Durr.
Okay, fair enough. So, well, let's go back to the phones. And Sheila in Ackard. Sheila, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Well, I'm very interested in what you said about the insects and getting rid of them, because I have little tiny black worms that are, they seem to start in the apple trees and get into the blossoms, and then I find them all over the property on lawn and furniture everywhere. So I don't know what to do about them, but I'm using Captain Jack Deadbeat.
Yeah, yep. That's the spinosad, I think. Yep.
Yeah.
Very effective.
But the real problem is I just got today my third yellow climbing rose because the first two, one after the other, died in the place that I put them. There's not too many places on my property that I can plant a rose because there's a lot of walnuts, black walnuts.
Okay.
So there is one place, and I've put up a thing for it to climb on. The first rose I put there was a white one, and it got kind of wild and sent out huge tentacles that would, you know, connect to your back or the back of your head or something, and I just couldn't deal with it anymore and got rid of it. And then I put in one of these lovely yellow roses, autumn sunset roses, and it was okay, sort of, and then it died over the winter. So I got the guy to replace it, which he did, saying, looking at the root and saying, well, it didn't connect. It didn't grow in the earth. So I put in a new one, and that one is dead as a doornail.
Huh. Over the winter?
So I've got another one now, and I don't know if something is wrong with the earth, do I have to dig out all the earth that's in there and replace it with something else?
Oh, boy.
Or if I should start in a slightly different place in the garden, like maybe 5 feet from there, behind the frame that I put in for it to come
Yeah, I would certainly try a different spot. You know, it's hard to know what's going on there. There are so many variables, but when in doubt, move it. Yeah, I would change the location.
Is that common, though, that nothing will grow? It's like a biblical curse.
You know, you never know what happens.
Everything else is growing. Even 4 blueberries that I dug up and moved because they were never producing, they were getting too much shade, they are, 2 months later, they've got blueberry flowers on them.
You know, to lose a rose over the winter is not uncommon. I mean, that's pretty often that happens.
Yeah, that very first rose you talked about that you had to move because of the tentacles getting kind of crazy there, that one did really, really well there, though.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, so my initial thinking on that, based on the fact that the one did really, really well and the other two, which were the same variety, correct?
No, different variety.
The other two were different varieties?
Yeah.
All right.
The other two were both. The next three, the one that I have now still in its pot, are all yellow climbing roses, autumn sunset.
Gut feeling is probably it's not it's dying out in the winter because of the hardiness.
I did do a quick check, and autumn sunset is zone 4.
It is zone 4.
So it that which is great. I don't know where you live, but that's still a great rose. So when you plant roses, and I'm sure you've done this before, but you would amend the soil really well, lots of organic matter. But if that plant is grafted, if it has a bud union, which is, you know, that little knob where the root stalk comes up and then the actual autumn sunset is attached. That knob should be inserted into the ground a couple of inches.
Oh, it should.
Roses and tomatoes you can plant too deep.
That's the only thing you plant deep, but you do plant those too deep.
So
the graft should be under the ground by an inch or two.
Yep. And then you water regularly this summer so that it really takes well. Fertilizing it once or twice is because it's a heavy bloomer is what we would recommend always. And then in the fall, no pruning. Don't cut anything off of it by October. Just leave it alone. And then at Thanksgiving, go over to your vegetable garden, throw in a wheelbarrow full of soil or buy some bags of soil and pour them gently onto the plant to make a big mound.
Yep. It's called winter mulching.
Okay. And use soil or compost, not bags of mulch and not leaves, something heavy and soil-like.
You want it to freeze and stay
frozen.
And
leave it there till April, I bet it'll come through.
Well, thanks, Sheila. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the number. It's The Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves here to answer your questions. And Donna in Averill Park. Donna, you're on.
Yes, I have a couple of quick questions. Mm-hmm. The first one is the Virginia creeper you spoke about. Does that grow in complete shade? And if not, what would?
I've seen that growing in pretty much complete shade.
Yeah, it'll grow in complete shade. It's a very pretty quick, aggressive vine. Once you have it, it will cover quite a bit. It's related to Boston ivy, but it's our native Boston ivy.
Yep, and it'll also take a lot of sun too. So it kind of goes sun to shade.
Really pretty.
Great, thank you. Another question is, this saves me a call to Fatigans. I want to give a really dark lilac plant as a wedding present. Do you have any? And what are they called? What's the name for them?
Well, we had some when I left. I'm not sure. It changes pretty fast right now. But Charles Jolly is a dark one. There's actually three or four or five pretty dark purples now. And when I left, we still had some.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so I guess I got to make a trip there.
All tomorrow. Right.
There you go.
And the next question is about the chipmunks.
Yes.
I planted some daffodil bulbs, and I went back 2 days later, and they were all dug up. Would the chipmunks be doing that?
If you put in some... yes. The first thing answer is yes, because chipmunks, if you disturb the ground, they might think there's something in there. But it also could be squirrels. It also could be skunks. It was a variety of things last fall.
Yeah. One trick I've found over the years, too, if you do disturb soil like that and you're having that problem, camouflaging that new dig with whatever's around you. So let's say you're in an area where there's some leaf litter, you grab some of those leaves, lightly sprinkle it over top of that hole, and these animals will walk right by that.
There's a product called Soil Perfector, too, that you could put around in the soil and on the top of the soil. It's kind of sharp. It's like an expanded volcanic product, I think, and they don't like to dig in it, so sometimes that helps.
Yeah, right. And one other trick I've used, too, is I've taken hardware cloth, or if it's just like a hole or two, and you kind of just put that over the new area, sometimes with that camo, and once they hit that metal, they're gone. Okay. And then shortly, a week later, they're not coming back to double check if you still have it there.
All right, let's go over to Isabel in Saugerties. Isabel, you're on.
How do you do? I have a Rosa Sharon bushes, which I did not trim back last fall, and now the pods are still on it. Is it too late to trim it back now, and will it bloom this year then?
You know, the typical time I recommend pruning Rosa Sharon is actually very early spring prior to bud break. So,
and they may not have broken bud yet because they're late.
And they are late.
However, this is a perfect time to do it as well.
That's true. And you're also, everything's a little delayed this year too, which is helping your case. So now it would be better than fall. Unless it's broken growth, in which case then hold off. Midsummer, you can also prune, but you lose some flowers.
They're definitely going to flower, but I would definitely I would just take the tops off now. But they'll flower.
Okay,
for sure.
Thank you so much. Good.
Thank you very much for the call. Quickly before our next break, let's go to Nicole in Shokan. Nicole, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My question is, we have a vine here growing, and it's really a bad one because it traps itself around other things, choke them and kill it. I was told a long time ago by a coworker, if you cut it before full moon, or after full moon, it doesn't grow back. No, I don't remember if it's before full moon or after full moon.
Yeah, well, the answer to that, not related to the moon cycle. The time to really cut that to get it to not come back would be in the springtime, right around maybe now, depending on your site, but probably around now. You let the energy of the plant that's stored, that flushes out the new leaves, get used. As soon as that energy is used, cut it. And watch for some regrowth.
It's a beautiful leaf here. The stem is orangey, so are the roots. Sometimes you can dig them out, but sometimes it's too deep, and that's when they kill everything else. So.
Yeah, just keep cutting it.
Nothing to do with the full moon, huh?
Cutting it now, and then watch for regrowth, and then cut it back. But not related to the moon, I would say, is a pretty safe bet. in terms of getting it to either grow back or not.
Thank you, Nicole. We appreciate it. We have time for another call here before our next break, and we go over to Anthony in South Hadley. Anthony, you're on.
Hello, gentlemen. Hi, Greg. I have a question regarding shrubbery. We put in a full-time generator last winter with a large propane tank, and we're interested in hiding it with a native deer-resistant bushy shrub. It would be on the northwest side of the house and in a fairly shady location. So I'm wondering what you think would work there.
When you said you had me going, and then you said fairly shady, so that made me think of Lindera spice bush. It's deciduous, so it will be somewhat visible in the wintertime, but from now until October, it will disappear. It's a very fast growing 5, 6, 7 foot tall, thickly foliaged plant.
If you could afford the size, a hemlock is an evergreen. It would do. You don't want to use yews, or they're going to get eaten. Arborvitae are going to get eaten.
I was going to also suggest a hemlock as well, and I love the spice bush. So you guys,
some of the viburnums might work. They'll take a fair amount of shade.
Yeah, and then you could, if it's, you said very shady or somewhat. Is there some sun there?
Only incidentally, and we really would prefer an evergreen if that would work. Someone locally suggested a mountain laurel.
Mountain laurel, if your pH is acidic, then mountain laurel could be effective. It sort of depends on your definition of native. So the Catawba rhododendrons, your standard sort of magenta rhododendrons are native up into New York State, might not quite Massachusetts.
Rhododendron maximum
is native up into Massachusetts, and so that would be an evergreen.
And if you do go with the hemlock, you want to look for a cultivar if you don't want it to turn into a larger tree over time. If you want it to be max out at like 5-6 feet, that there is a lot of cultivars that are kind of topping out around that size.
Okay. Anthony, we have to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. It's The Gardening Show on WAMC, and our number is 800-348-2551. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward are here for your questions, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear featuring new styles for 2018. Eye exams by appointment, 518-459-2638. Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio, privatefinancialdesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, member FINRA and SIPC. Personal wine cellar, Glenville. Family-owned business since 2011 and providing an array of red and white wines, spirits, and libations. Weekly tastings. Not the biggest, just the best. 518-399-9463. Agricultural Stewardship Association. Helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. Hooked Seafood Co. Latham. Fresh seafood retail market and kitchen with scratch-made lunch and dinner menu. Raw bar, lobster rolls, whole belly clams, fish and chips available. HookedSeafoodINC.com. And the Arkell Museum at Canajo Harry, presenting Capturing the Essence, the artwork of Beth Van Hosen and Mark Adams. Through June 10th, information at ArkellMuseum.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's gardening today, and what a beautiful day to garden. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves are here, and we'll blast through a few emails here and then get back to the phones for the home stretch. This one is from Renee. Two questions. We have 4 raised beds garden, and we rotate crops in them every year for several years. Now, when we plant cucumbers or squash, we get wilt. What natural remedies can you suggest? The old wilt thing.
So cucumbers and squash, is that what you said?
Cucumbers or squash,
So 2 different things. The squash wilt, I would think, is squash borer. And so that's separate from, and cucumbers don't usually get that.
Okay.
So I think that's true. And if the cucumbers are wilting, it's probably from cucumber beetle kind of passing on that virus. So first thing I always suggest is floating row cover when you plant. That keeps the bugs out for the first 6 or 8 weeks. That can often break the cycle on the squash borer. Cucumber beetles, you know, kind of hard to stop them. They just keep showing up. So after you uncover, you could consider, you know, that I believe the spinosad actually does work on them, a nice organic insecticide, and you would make regular applications to limit their feeding.
All right. This second question is about poison ivy. And Renee says, I have a patch that's creeping up a bank into the garden area, and I've tried homemade herbicide using vinegar, Epsom salts, and detergent, which works great on weeds but not very effective for the poison ivy. Can you recommend a safe alternative to the commercial herbicide?
That is the question we get all the time. And the safest alternative is to suit up, put on some rubber gloves, and pull it up.
You could also keep cutting it. If it's like a serious stalk, again, that same thing, let it use a stored energy. It has to photosynthesize in order to keep going.
Yeah.
So if it's at a spot where you could do that, it's going to work out well. Also, if you can mow it, again, suit up.
Right.
But
some
if you
people
can mow
are much
it,
more sensitive to it than others.
Absolutely.
So it doesn't
find
like
somebody
to be mowed.
Who's not sensitive.
Back in the 70s, that was the only way to get rid of poison ivy.
Mow it.
Well, mow it,
but
or pull it up.
Yeah. You know, and keep cutting.
In general, wearing clothes when you're outside mowing is probably a good plan.
I agree.
This one is from Jill in New Windsor. We want to plant a row of green giant arborvitae for a privacy screen. We'll be clearing the area of wisteria, honeysuckle, and forsythia. Do we need to smother the ground with the plastic for a whole year before we can plant the green giants, or can we plant them now and cover the surrounding area with plastic? And that's from Jill in New Windsor.
Well, certainly. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
you
if you
could,
clean it out,
you could. Yeah. If you're going to cut everything down, I mean, this may include some equipment. You may want to pull it out with a little excavator if you have access to that, or someone does, so that there are no stumps or roots left in the area you're going to plant.
All right.
And you're making some long bed where you're going to put in the green giants, and then on the outer side of that, mowing or covering would work.
All right. This is
also heavy cardboard with mulch would smother too, and then you don't have to go back and remove it.
And just keep in mind, if you're planting arborvitae and you have a deer problem, don't do it.
Good point.
Okay, you make a good point. Yep. All right. One more email, and then we'll get back to the phones. This one's from Greg. I have a white pine about 80 feet high. The terminal bud was terminated at 20 feet, so we have a hydra with the 60-foot arms, 36 inches at the base. Can we trim 3 of the arms and not harm the tree? I don't want to take it down altogether, but it is increasingly menacing.
No,
that's from Greg.
You don't want to cut off those big arms. That's going to lead to a deteriorating tree in the long run. So you would want to get an arborist in there and have it cabled. Unless there's something that that arborist would see that's indicating a lot of internal rot. In most cases, more times than not, the menace can be mitigated using some cabling, and it's a lot cheaper usually to cable than it is to remove. So we're not talking about a big price difference. If anything, you're probably saving a few bucks and preserving
a
tree.
That tree, is that what you describe as a cabbage pine?
We call them octopuses. But
okay, I thought I've heard this word, pines.
Cabbage pine.
Yeah. Like when they break and multiple liters.
I've also heard them called broccoli tops. So, another common name.
Okay.
All right, we all good?
But cable should do it.
All right,
get an arborist, though.
Let's go to Suzette in Fort Plain. Suzette, you're on.
Yes, hello. Thank you so much for the show.
You're welcome.
Yes, I have several fruit trees, apple, peach, pear, that I want to plant on some soil that has been fallow. It's organic soil. I've got about 2 acres I'm working with. I've ordered a tractor trailer load of compost, so about 50 yards of compost. And the soil that I'm working with is a clay Hudson and then a Wasaic. I dug the hole for the first tree, and it was really clay. It was very difficult to dig the hole. My question is, what do I do with this compost? Do I have a local farmer plow it into the soil? Do I only side dress it on top? What is your best answer?
So you're talking about planting a large number of trees in a site where the soil is is a native soil. It hasn't been really disturbed, the soil, right? It's just a heavy soil. Is that correct?
Yes. It's a mixture between a clay and a loamy soil.
Yeah, but not something that's been brought in. This is what we're talking about, that what you're dealing with on the site, correct?
It's native.
It's correct. Native.
This was a farming yeah. field. It used to be.
Yeah. So my first advice to you would be to plant trees that like that soil. Because ultimately, they have to live in that soil. No matter what you... And if you add a lot of organics, like compost, to clay, it increases the water-holding capacity, which already is quite high for clay, dramatically.
Yeah.
And if you fill the holes and dig the holes out of the heavy stuff and put the trees in and then use the compost as a backfill, especially if you start to amend it more than 20% of total volume, then you create in-ground containers for those trees, and the roots never really spread out into the surrounding soil. If we think of the physiological growth habit of a tree, the roots will stretch 2 to 3 times the canopy spread. So they need to get way out from that canopy in order to be healthy. So ideally, purchase plants that would like your heavier soil.
If this is Hudson Valley soil, I mean, there are an awful lot of orchards in the Hudson Valley, and the trees do pretty well in it.
Apples like heavy soil.
They like heavy ground.
And,
so,
the compost you could save and use as a mulch, a circular, you know, 2-3 inch layer of mulch, 4 or 5 feet across under those trees.
Yeah, and that would work well for that. And it would create some vertical action and actually improve some of the aggregate structure of that soil by just top dressing. But you don't want to just start to create a new soil condition. You'd be better off just picking plants that really like that soil. Like Greg said, or Bob said, apples, they do really, really well there. It's because they like heavy soil. Some plants like heavier soil better than rich organic soil.
All right, let's go over to Mike in Dalton. Mike, you're on.
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking my call. This is in regards to grass. At the beginning of April, I put down a weed and feed that had a halt pre-emergent, and I'm getting a little confused of different people, and even online says when I can reseed. Is there a rule of thumb?
If you put down a pre-emergent crabgrass preventer like a halt, you've got to wait a good 2 or 3 months before you can seed, because the crabgrass preventer prevents the crabgrass seed from growing, but it also prevents any other grass seed from growing. So, you're looking at summer to fall to replant that area.
I think the bag should tell you as well, and I think it is at least 6 or 8 weeks is what they usually say on there.
Okay.
But you could check that bag if you still have it.
All right, Mike, thank you very much for the call. And Gloria in Cambridge. Gloria.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you, and thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
Thanks. I'm up here in Cambridge, and there's this invasive vine. I thought once that it might be morning glory, because it does grow a flower sometime probably in August, but right now it's coming up out of the soil, and it's up. Depending on where you are, it could be up a foot or two.
It's
killing everything. I had to pretty much destroy my berry patch and my asparagus. It's just growing in my garden. It's been for about 2 or 3 years now. I pulled it by the roots yesterday. My son and I got down and pulled a lot of it out by the root, or as much as we could. But I feel that it's still going to root back up. I don't know what it is.
Sounds like bindweed. Does it have like a triangular sort of looking leaf to it, and it kind of twists into everything, kind of grows into everything?
Habit? It's more like a heart.
Yeah, that would be what they call field or hedge bindweed, and it is in the morning glory family. So it would have a morning glory type flower, and it is a nuisance. It's easy to rip out.
You have to get your son out there more often.
Just keep ripping it out, and you keep cutting it this time of year. It does rip out fairly easy, and luckily, unlike bishop's weed, it seems to be a fairly a decent way to control it by continuously ripping it out.
Yeah,
Bishop's weeds.
You'll leave
story.
Little pieces and they'll resprout, but it's not. It shouldn't be too terrible.
Okay. All right, Gloria. Thank you very much. Over to Dory in Pittsfield. Dory, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two pruning questions. I have a decorative sumac tree that's about 7 years old. It's 8 feet tall, 8 feet wide-ish. I have several branches, but the new growth is only on the very ends of the branches, so it's mostly branches. I'm wondering if I could cut it back and not kill it.
So this is a staghorn sumac that you have trained into a single stem tree. It's not multiple stems coming out of the ground.
It's the decorative one, not, you know, with the limey yellow leaves.
Oh, tiger eyes, maybe?
Yep, tiger eyes.
I forget what the name of it is.
So they are a little less aggressive than it is a staghorn type with that chartreuse leaf. They are a little less aggressive. I to be honest, haven't tried to knock them down. But generally, when you have one that's really well established, you could finish it off by taking it down to the ground. It's what I'm saying is yes. That's the only thing I can offer.
And you want to create a more bushy plant?
Yeah, I don't want to kill it. I mean, I love the tree, but it's just all branches now and no, I mean, like maybe 6 inches of leaves at the very end.
Yep.
So I would like it to be more bush, you know, and have more leaves on it than branches.
So taking some of it off.
Yeah, what I would say is shoot elongation is created by, it's pushed by hormone flow in plants. So auxins specifically. So if you were to just tip, when I say tip, I mean a couple of inches off the new growth, all the top growth, just a couple of inches. Let it grow out a little bit, but then, you know, take that off. And don't take anything off anything that's in the sides. You are going to temporarily send the flow of hormones that would normally create shoot or apical dominance at the top. And you're going to tell that flow of hormones to go elsewhere, and it would always be lower than that. And that's how you typically create a bushier plant. That works with almost any plant.
Okay. Dory, thank you very much. All right, quickly, we only have a minute here, and then I want to get to an email that came in twice. This is from Bonnie in Ashfield. Bonnie, you're up.
Hi. I just have a quick question. My daughter grafted a apple tree when she was in high school about 5 years ago. It's a Macoun. 2 years ago, we got some really nice apples off it. So my question is, when is the best time to prune it? And last year, we just got some gnarly apples. What can I spray it with after the bees are done with the blossoms? Something I can just do, a hand pump type thing or something.
So pruning would ideal pruning would have been before bud break, before it flowered. So back in, you know, April, March, February, all the way back to December.
Okay, early spring then. Okay.
You can do some summer pruning after this has flowered and you're looking at it and you want to do a little light pruning in June, you can certainly go ahead and do that again.
There is an organic fruit tree spray, which is basically sulfur and pyrethrins, pyrethrins being the insecticide derived from chrysanthemums, and sulfur obviously an organic. And that's relatively effective if applied at the right times.
Okay, and that should be applied like after the blossoms
right,
from the
after
tree
your blossom.
And the fruit?
Right.
Oh, okay. Is that something you can purchase almost anywhere?
Yep.
Or?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Is there like a brand name or something?
We don't usually do brand names, but
it would refer to vegetables, fruit trees. It would be something labeled specifically for edibles.
Yeah,
and it would have of those products in it.
It would
either say insecticide, fungicide, or it would you'd have to look at the active ingredients.
All right, thank you, Bonnie. This email came in twice from Sandra in Mill River, Massachusetts. The first time came through with a picture, and then she sent another one a few minutes ago saying, geez, I don't know if I got into your spam filter. Truth is, Sandra, we get so many emails. Yours was literally next on the list, so we'll do that right now. And I showed you guys this picture. She writes, I have been pulling this weed out of a new flower bed we started 3 years ago, and it keeps coming back. It's all connected, and when I can pull one and find more above ground are connected to that root, I keep pulling and digging them out, but they are persistent. Would appreciate any advice how to get rid of this. First of all, again, I'll show it to you. What do you think it is?
Well, we think it's Equisetum or horsetail, which is really hard to get rid of.
Why?
Well, because it's got this same thing we talk about all the time with the underground storage of energy. And if you watch it, it does not grow in a lawn because you keep cutting it. So
right.
If you can either keep pulling it or cut it or weed whack it or something, you'll get rid of it. But it'll take years.
Yeah, oh, that's the flower bed, it's a pain because you can't cut it and you keep pulling it. And those, like she said, a lot of these little fragments, those kind of weeds are always more persistent because little root fragments make more and more of these plants. But persistence does pay off.
Yeah, getting out into the garden more frequently.
You know, is this the time to cut all the Japanese knotweed, which keeps coming
Absolutely.
Up year after year?
Yep, just get right on it now.
We thought we had it under control, and now the last year or so it's had a renaissance. And
let up.
Persistence.
My wife calls them the evil plants.
Yeah. Well, you know, they all have a place.
It has other names, too.
One way or another, but just keep cutting. And low cutting is better than high cutting because you don't want them to have low. There.
I can't get the mower because they're in with the pachysandras and things like that. And, you know, it's a
cut.
That's right. Well, we'll have the kids do it. Yep. You know, you give kids sharp objects, it usually works out just fine.
Oh, you have fewer kids.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob Graves. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward here. Thank you, guys. Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings, henyonbakery.com. Capital Roots, making fresh local produce accessible to Capital Region neighborhoods. Healthy, affordable food should be a right, not a privilege. To learn more, capitalroots.org. Mass Match, for over 16 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in Western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. At Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Painter Edith Hunsberger, exhibiting watercolor and acrylic paintings at Paradise City in Northampton, Massachusetts, Memorial Day weekend, booth number 935, edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Bob, Fred, and Greg for being here. Thank you for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your calls. We did the best we could, and we'll do it again next month. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Your phones were taken by Dina Salzman. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we'll explore Mediterranean and Lebanese dishes. Be with us for that. Right now, stand by for news.